Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-trapped, I pushed past that. Now some sickle makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it.
When
the national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Welcome, welcome. You're listening to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Tuesday, April the 8th, a crazy April 8th.
It is.
Oh, my goodness. My name's Christy.
I'm Linda.
And we're broadcasting from the KCNR studios on the dial at 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. And streaming online at KCNR1460.com. So if you can't find us on the dial, go hit us on the internet and you'll find us there. You can follow us on X at Tokens Radio Show for updates and commentary and, I don't know, anything you'd like to share, you know, send us a copy. And we'd like to say hello.
Good evening, Ben.
Thank you for keeping us on track tonight.
Yes, you're welcome. Good
he
evening.
He always makes the studio so inviting to come into. It's really nice. So,
thank you.
Hey, and Jim, if you're listening, he really likes the jerky.
Yes, it's very, very good.
Ah, there you go.
Don't say that. We can't tell Jim those things. I have to talk to you later about this, Ben, the relationship here, okay? I'll clue you in a little bit.
Ooh, Jim, you're getting popular here. So we've got a packed show ahead here for you tonight. So why don't we go ahead and dive in? You know, we're going to be breaking down how Bitcoin might jump from your digital wallet to America's financial toolbox. Yeah, that's interesting. And Senator Loomis thinks that Bitcoin can slash the national debt. And Howard Lednick is talking economic history, and Jack Dorsey is back on the scene. He's worried Bitcoin might miss its chance at everyday use. We'll untangle what all that means for your money and where this will ride next. But stick around, and we're going to dig into the good stuff. But first, why don't we get a market update and a word from our sponsor?
Okay, before I do that, I just want to say, isn't it amazing how all of a sudden now, you know, we had a lull there with Bitcoin that it really wasn't talked about too much?
Oh, gosh. It's
and now it's like circling around, and everybody's like, you think it's a good time? Should I buy it? I mean, it's starting to perk up again. It's kind of interesting how it does that.
I think we're hitting a critical mass time.
Good point.
Adoption is here.
Adoption is here.
Which was the whole purpose for doing the show and do our little part to add to the adoption equation. So here
there
we
you
are.
Go, the education piece.
What a great point, Linda.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Bitcoin, you're welcome, is at, if you can believe this, 76,494.
That's a buying opportunity.
I was going to say
Not financial advice, but it is a buy opportunity.
I see the blue light like special coming, you know. I remember that.
I love that, yeah.
IBIT ETF is at $43.26. ETH is at $14.66.
Wow, that took a dive.
XRP, get this, $178.
Ouch.
Again, whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah, Ben, you got a blue light sound in there?
Yeah.
He's looking.
MicroStrategy is at $237.95.
We might get our blue light at some point in the show. So there you go.
So our friends at the Queen of Dragons, home of fresh and local, sponsors today's show. They offer carefully cultivated, unique strains with elevated experience, exotic genetics, and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staff. Shop their selections and schedule a delivery at www.thequeenofdragons.com or stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X, or you can always give them a call, 530-276-9771.
So it just hit me, robust flavors. What does that mean to you?
Very soothing, tasty, mellow, relaxing.
Oh, I like that. Well, if anybody has an idea about that, hit us an X with it.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what your thought is on robust flavors.
Yeah.
Don't blow up our feed with weirdness, but love to know.
Yeah, that's what I get. Very soothing. Yeah. Robust.
There you go. Oh, wow. The news. The news, the news. Why don't we go ahead and talk a little bit about that? We've got Bitcoin, tariffs, the economy, and a cyber heads up. It's locked and loaded, and we're covering the events from last week to today up until the showtime. So tariffs are still the main event. President Trump's Liberation Day plans are in full swing. You got a 10% tariff on all U.S. imports kicked off on Friday, and it's got the globe buzzing. On Tuesday, he upped the ante, announcing 185 countries, including China, India, you name it, face steeper duties tomorrow, starting on April the 9th. Cars are getting hit with 25%, and pharma's on deck for more. Today, Trump doubled down, threatening a 50% extra tariff on China, pushing their total to 104% if they don't drop their 34% retaliatory tariffs by midnight. China's not blinking, calling it blackmail and digging in while banning rare earth exports critical for tech. The EU's prepping to counter tariffs, and Canada's set to slap 25% on U.S. autos tomorrow, and Southeast Asia's exports are wincing. This trade war's got economics warning of skyrocketing prices and supply chain chaos, and your grocery run's about to feel it. But Trump did say this is like surgery for a sick patient.
Right.
So what happens when you have surgery? You get knocked down, and then you have a recovery period. You get strong, and then you get stronger and stronger.
Yeah, they put you in the recovery room afterwards.
And that's where we are right now. Yep.
Yeah. All right. The economy's on a tightrope. Markets are a mess. We know that. The Dow is down another 1,200 points today after last week's 2,200 point plunge. The S&P's teetering. NASDAQ's deep in the bear land. And global stocks have shed $8.2 trillion,
with a T,
since April 2nd. March jobs are solid, 228,000 added, but unemployment at 4.2%, inflation is 2.8%, and Fed Chair Powell sounding the alarms about stagflation. Trump's team, like Treasury Scott Bessent, says no recession here, but J.P. Morgan's Jamie Dimon calling tariffs a potential economic nuke. A fake report about a 90-day tariff pause spiked markets briefly Monday. Bitcoin and stocks jumped before the White House shut it down and everything tanked again. It's a wild ride. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, it is.
You know, people out there, they're saying this and that's going to happen, and they don't even know yet. We don't even know exactly how this is going to play out when.
Well, did we just forget what happened in 2020 when they shut the economy down? Like nothing that's ever happened in our lifetime?
Yeah, and that wasn't a slow thing. It was basically, okay.
It was a light switch.
Yeah, boom. It was like,
yeah, this is yeah. Nothing. I'd just say just turn the TV off. Don't listen to the news. Except for this. Bitcoin's dancing through the storm. It hit $88,000 last Tuesday, crashed to $77,000 on Sunday. It's the lowest since November, except for today, per Bloomberg. Then clawed back to $80,200 today before dipping to $76,400 right before showtime.
Yeah.
It's down 10% since tariffs dropped, but it's outpacing stocks volatility, which is good. Bears see $52,000 if $78,000K breaks. Bulls want 100,000 if it holds at 83K. Bessent's hyping Bitcoin as digital gold, and X posts are buzzing that it's breaking free from equities. And I think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
With markets crumbling, is Bitcoin our lifeboat? Cyber alert. This is huge. Tax scams are spiking. You're probably hearing about this, Linda. Malware bites flagged fake urgent tax reminder emails phishing Microsoft credentials and aiming to hijack your digital life. With tax deadlines closing in, scammers are feasting. Double check those emails. Just they're phishing. So don't click on any links or scan any scan codes. Don't do that. if you get some sort of phishing email. And how it's showing up is that, hey, we can save you X amount of dollars in taxes. Yeah. You know, you need to do this now. Let us go ahead and give you a free check. And you go ahead and you scan that QR code, and then you're in trouble.
I think another one might be, because I've been seeing it a lot in my email, is your invoice.
Oh, yeah. I get that a lot.
Yeah. Here's your invoice or something like that. The first one was like, what the hell are you talking about? It's like, yeah. So yeah. Just FYI.
So that's it for the news brief, and why don't we go ahead and kick things off?
All right. So Bitcoin is a strategic national asset. Okay. So we're exploring how Bitcoin is being reimagined at the highest levels of government. We've talked about this. It's going to be in the news a lot. There's still a lot to do. Senator Loomis has outlined a bold vision that would transfer both our national debt. Again, I said national debt. Wouldn't that be nice? And how we think about reserve assets. So let's take a listen to this. There's several key points in her recent statements. It's only about a minute long.
Yeah, there's going to be three sound bites.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So just bear with us.
Don't worry about the mics. We'll be okay on that, okay? All right.
All right, here we go. We got about three of them to go.
It still allows us, at the end of 20 years, to take a million Bitcoin and reduce the debt by half. And if you went with something more aggressive, you could literally eliminate the debt.
And then the next bite.
Well, it's certainly my hope that we can establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve. So we would start by converting our current assets that are already in Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies into the base investment in a Bitcoin strategic reserve.
Okay, and her last point.
4 years ago, it was very contrarian to be a Bitcoiner in D.C. Now what is it like?
It's the difference between night and day. And it happened when President Trump was sworn in. He started with executive orders that were very pro the United States becoming the digital asset capital of the world, supporting Bitcoin mining here in America, and supporting the idea of a strategic reserve, as well as putting together a crypto team at the White House.
Well, that's quite a change in thinking, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
from
it
fringe
is.
Technology to potential national strategy, and with just a few years. I know they've been talking about this for a while, but it's just solidifying now. And what strikes me is how she's connecting Bitcoin directly to solving major economic challenges like the national debt.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of a theme for the whole cabinet. I should back up. Not the whole cabinet, but a lot of the Trump team, that's what they're really focusing on, is getting the debt down.
Yes, although it doesn't seem that way right now, but there is there's a method to the tariff madness.
Yeah, so when you compare, you know, the dollar and the fundamental differences between Bitcoin and the dollar, it's quite clear.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Loomis made this point particularly well. So let's take a listen to this soundbite.
About 44 seconds. Here we go.
The U.S. dollar is designed to decline in value at least 2% a year. Every year, the U.S. dollar is worth less and less than the year before. Quite the opposite is true with Bitcoin. Yes, it has short-term volatility, but long-term, it's done nothing but grow since inception. So saving dollars means having a declining asset. Saving Bitcoin means having a growing asset. So I want to buy groceries and pay my rent with U.S. dollars. I want to put my savings in Bitcoin.
That is so well said, isn't it?
Yeah, that
2%.
Really puts it in perspective.
We've lived our lifetime with this 2% baked in the cake without really thinking what that means, right? But really what it means is that there's an inflationary concept of 2%. It's already in place. And if you take that dollar bill that's worth a dollar today, it's worth half that amount.
Right, yeah.
In 50 years, theoretically, unless, you know, with all the tinkering with the market, right?
Right. And what a thing to do when you stop and think about it, and I know we've talked about it many times on this show, is take the fiat dollar, and like she says, buy groceries or whatever, but right. even take it and put it into Bitcoin and stuff. So you've taken something that has no value and placing it into something not only that has value, but it's going to grow.
That's how the plebs, okay, us worker bees, get a leg up against these
exactly
elites who've been doing that, you know, from the millennia.
Yeah,
right?
When you stop and think about it, you know, we always go, if we only knew.
Yes.
Well, you kind of know.
Well, we're being told. Yeah. It's up to you to not believe it, you know. But, my gosh, this all fits within a broader historical context. Secretary Howard Lutnick has been explaining this
for
some time, and he's drawing fascinating parallels between America's economic past and where we might be headed. And we've got two sound bites from him, and we're going to play those right now. Here we go. It's less than a minute.
America was built on tariffs with no income tax. No income tax till 1913. None. Greatest, richest country in the world. So when Donald Trump says, make America great again, what he's talking about is from 1880 to 1913, when the country had so much money that we had blue ribbon commissions, which you guys would have been on,
yeah,
right, to try to figure out how to spend the money.
Right.
Can you imagine a blue ribbon commission? Here we go. Here's the second one.
You've got all these countries, they charge a VAT or a consumption tax. What do they do with that tax? If they turn around and sell really cheap energy to their steel company, then their steel companies destroy ours, put ours out of business, and then all of the steel goes elsewhere, and we can't defend ourselves in a war.
Oh, that's huge, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, that makes me feel real warm and cozy.
I think that was the long-term play with China. And when you examine the Belt and Road Initiative,
right,
it is really to put a country into that position to where you are, you have to submit to the Chinese government. That is their long-term play. They want to rule the world.
Yeah, it is. And with the tariffs and what Trump and the team is trying to do is turn it around and bring the stuff home or start up stuff here at home so we don't have to rely on that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the economic policies, you know, have a real impact on American industry and security.
Yeah, it does.
And looking into the future, you know, approaches, Lutnick sees some creative opportunities for America to leverage its position as the world's largest consumer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so let's take a listen. We got two sound bites. It's about a minute and a half. So give it a listen.
If we are the great consumer of the earth, the United States buys everybody's products. We buy everybody's goods. You just have to treat us fairly, and that is the problem. So some countries, you know, which have these VATs and they use these VAT taxes to, you know, they basically subsidize their domestic right. production, right? That's got to really be balanced. We've got to figure that out together. But what you're going to see is you're going to see tariff rates decline. You're going to see the opening of all of these global markets to our agriculture, right. to our ranchers, to our fishermen. You're going to see American production start to rise and finally be fair.
And here's the second bite.
Crypto, obviously, Bitcoin. You guys announced the strategic Bitcoin reserve. But broadly speaking, you also announced sort of this idea of the sovereign wealth fund.
Yes.
Can we talk about that? Sort of what is the vision behind that? How do you want that to be executed? How do you think it should be run? What assets are on the table? What assets and strategies should never be on the table? How are you thinking about it?
The greatest customer in the world, the United States government, the most powerful, the greatest customer, buys stuff. We walk in. We're going to buy, this is the example I like to use. We're going to buy 2 billion COVID vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
When we buy it, Pfizer and Moderna stocks are going to triple. They're going to triple. So then we say everyone's going to have this vaccine. If I were, after Jared Kushner negotiated the best deal he could, if Howard Lutnick walked in the room, Howard Lutnick would say, what do you think? 20% warrants? Right. 20% warrants?
Right.
Right? What? So we'd make $50 billion. Off of who? Nobody.
Do you hear that little snicker? What a great example.
Right?
That was so real time for us. I mean, what he's saying is a fascinating approach. Wouldn't you say using government purchasing power more strategically? And meanwhile, we're seeing some major shifts in the global financial landscape.
We sure are.
Yeah. So we've got a couple, just about 30 seconds.
Seconds.
Yeah. So don't worry about it, Ben. We'll leave the mic on.
The further we get into 2025, it's becoming more and more clear that the current global economic and monetary order is being restructured right before our eyes. And with gold continuing its historic run and Bitcoin lagging, we look at what it might take for Bitcoin to regain its legs in 2025.
And then we've got the next one right here.
Over $1.65 trillion were wiped out of the U.S. stock market this morning. For context, this is approximately the entire Bitcoin market cap, which is the current dollar value of all the Bitcoin in the world. That's right. The entire market cap of Bitcoin was liquidated from the stock market just this morning.
Yeah, that's kind of a big deal, isn't it? But where would the money go back to? See, everything's just reshaping. That's all that they're doing.
They're just shifting it
around.
They're
rebalancing. Mm-hmm. All of these investment bankers are rebalancing their balance sheets. That's really what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make adjustments. This is all going to work out. We don't lose in the end.
Yeah, and you can't live your life by the stock market. Sorry. Hate to tell you. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Just
live your
that
life.
Way.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. You have been listening to Tokens Radio Show at 1460 AM and 96.5. We will be back in just a few minutes.
Experience glowing wild and illuminated Wildlife Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Saddle up, folks. Corey Meyer Real Estate presents the third annual Palisadro Frontier Day, Saturday, April 12th. Enjoy a full day of vendors, a trade show, a sizzling barbecue competition. Then, the action kicks up a notch with the Silver Bridge Rodeo, Bulls and Bronx, bull riding event. Learn more about Frontier Day and purchase pre-sale tickets now at pcfrontierday.com. Special thanks to our sponsors, Advanced Auto, Dolker Backo, Country Strong Fitness, and Red Sky Asphalt.
Hey, Redding, save big on Black Bear Diner's new basket bundle. Get your paws on a choice of sandwich, side, and drink for only $10. A great meal at a great price. Basket bundles, now available at Black Bear Diner. Be sure to stop by for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Black Bear Diner just added 4 brand new and 4 returning classics to the menu. Black Bear Diner, 2205 Hilltop Drive. Get big value and so many choices at Black Bear Diner.
Black Bear Diner.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
What shall we do about them?
Good day. Welcome to This Is Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, to provide the latest local updates. In Reading, the fentanyl crisis has overwhelmed traditional recovery efforts, driving Empire Recovery Center to seek innovative solutions. As overdose deaths surge due to potent synthetic opioids flooding the region, the center is integrating mental health support with expanded community outreach programs. Staff underscore the dire need to adapt to this escalating threat, which has stretched local resources thin.
Director Art Sevilla stated, "We can't keep doing the same thing and expect different outcomes." City officials endorsed the effort, viewing it as a crucial response to a mounting public health emergency. The initiative could become a blueprint for other communities battling similar challenges. While addiction grips the region, a county employee's actions stunned locals. Shasta County's Matthew Silvera, 39, was arrested on April 4th, facing felony embezzlement charges for allegedly stealing county-owned electronics. The sheriff's office began investigating in February after noticing missing components, linking sales to Silvera's online accounts. Search warrants at his home revealed more stolen items, solidifying the case. Sheriff Michael Johnson denounced the betrayal of public trust, vowing accountability. The incident jolted county officials, prompting a review of asset management protocols. If convicted, Silvera could face significant prison time, leaving the community questioning oversight. From local scandals to statewide discontent, a critique highlights growing frustration. A California Globe piece on April 2nd accuses Democratic lawmakers of forsaking constituents, citing Sacramento's rejection of bills on retail theft and transgender athletes. The halted transgender bills, barring trans youth from girls' sports, join high taxes, rising crime, and lax border security as evidence of misplaced priorities. North State residents feel neglected, author Edward Ring argues, as Democrats favor elites over working class struggles with inflation and housing. The article warns of a disconnect, predicting an electoral backlash as the party's supermajority pushes progressive agendas. On a lighter note, a Reading resident cleverly avoided a scam. They received an unsolicited package with a fake diamond ring and a payment demand, but contacted the police instead of paying. Authorities identified it as a brushing scam, where fraudsters trick people into transactions. The resident's swift action not only prevented personal loss, but also prompted a community-wide alert from law enforcement. Police Chief Brian Barner praised their vigilance, saying, "Awareness is our strongest shield." This incident highlights the growing need for caution as such scams proliferate, offering a small but uplifting win for Reading locals. Find more local stories on our social media, Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook, at Town Hall News on X, and MountaintopMedia.com. From all of us at Town Hall Brief, thanks for listening.
Well, welcome back to Tokens Radio Show. All right, when we think about Bitcoin's future, I know there's different views on how it will happen, what will make it happen for it to be successful
in
the long term.
You don't hear different views, do you? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. So many different views on it. But, you know, one of the people that we like real well is Jack Dorsey.
Yeah.
He has been a major Bitcoin advocate, but he sees some potential challenges ahead. So let's give a listen. We got a couple sound bites. They're short, so have a listen.
I think it fails through irrelevance. It fails to be relevant to people on a daily basis. If it just ends up being store value and nothing more, I don't think it gains relevance at all. I think it has to be payments for it to be relevant on the everyday. Otherwise, it's just something you buy and forget.
Well, if you can get by him not moving his lips when he talks, but we'll try this next one.
Okay.
I think building simple, accessible experiences that solve the payment use case, making it scale, making it fast, like giving the speed of the Visa and MasterCard networks real competition. I think all that changes, and there's tons of projects to do that, and that it continues to increase in privacy and security and ultimately safety gives you a third option. And I think we always want a third option to the U.S. dollar, to the Chinese yuan. Having a third option for currency, I think, is important, and it keeps the other currencies in check and governments in check.
So Dorsey believes Bitcoin needs to become useful for everyday payments, not just as a store of value. I mean, to really understand these different visions for Bitcoin, it helps to look at the history and meaning of the terms we use to describe money.
Yeah.
You know, so we've got two more bites for you, and then we'll cut it out for the rest of the night. So here we go.
Okay.
Many people point to Satoshi's original white paper, which states that Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. I think people get caught up specifically on the word cash and immediately think about a medium of exchange such as national currencies today. Many people use the term cash and currency interchangeably. But the word cash comes from the Latin word caspa, which literally means box or container, with its original English meaning being a box or container of physical money. Currency, on the other hand, comes from the Latin word curare, which means to run or to flow, with its original English meaning being a money that flows or circulates through an economy. So to take Satoshi's original statement of Bitcoin being a peer-to-peer electronic cash system, some would argue that he means cash in the sense of a physical bearer instrument.
Okay, and the second bite?
Bitcoin is in the process of solving arguably the biggest problem in the world right now, the problem of centrally controlled and manipulated money. We don't currently have a huge issue with currency and the flow of money. We do have a profound issue with our hard work and labor being stolen from us through debasement or money printing, which translates to inflation.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, the distinction between cash as storage and currency as flow is fascinating. It helps explain why Bitcoin is succeeding so well as a store of value right now. I mean, when you start and think about it, how do you see Bitcoin evolving, Christy? I mean, with all this going on and all these different inputs, and I mean, this is something none of us know for sure.
Well, one thing I don't agree with is Jack Dorsey's assertion that we have to have it be more than it is right now. It needs to be a payment system. And I think that's going to be one of the alternative payment systems. But we know it to be the store of value. It has been declared that. I mean, I think that is well known and it is accepted. I mean, I think it's going to get at some point like gold. Okay, we don't go around getting all excited about our gold. But we also know, like, how heavy it is and how difficult it is to do anything with it. So it's definitely, we're at an interesting inflection point at this point. And, you know, if the government moves forward with a strategic Bitcoin reserve, as Senator Loomis suggested, we can see a dramatic acceleration in adoption and legitimacy. And we see that happening now. And at the same time, I expect continued development of the payment layer through Lightning Network solutions and possibly others. I mean, that's the layer two solution.
Right. I mean, those are some great points about it, you know. You know, for some of our listeners out there, you know, they're not sure what it means for them. So, I think I'll give them a couple takeaways on this with Bitcoin. You know, it's starting to gather more. We talked about it earlier in the show, about how it's starting to come around again, and it's also reaching higher levels of the government.
Yeah,
that we didn't have before.
Yeah,
you know, the legitimacy is reaching the government. It's limited supply. So back to some of your points, do you think it's going to be easier, like for Bitcoin, to be used every day more when there's, you know, not so much being used, you know, that's been bought up? Our access, you know what I mean? Because it's going to come a point if we start using it for all these different things, it goes in the reserve and all that, the availability of it is going to probably change. So I don't know, maybe that'll make it a little bit different for daily transactions.
We'll be talking more about sats. Sats will become our normal vernacular. You know, rather than when we talk about Bitcoin, it's going to be sats because as Bitcoin is worth so much, we won't need as much to use for our day to day. If we choose to use it for day to day, there are going to be other cryptocurrencies we could use. I mean,
there is other ones.
I kind of like to lean towards Litecoin for that. And, I know there's some people out there, oh, why could you say that? Don't say it. But listen, Litecoin has always been in the background, and I look at it as it's the silver, the digital silver to Bitcoin digital gold. I am much more willing to spend my silver on day-to-day stuff. I mean, I have silver rounds and things like that that I could easily go ahead and use now, and it would be acceptable over a piece of gold, right, that's worth $3,000 or so. I mean, I would much rather do that. And Litecoin is just processed much faster. So Bitcoin isn't designed for the quick transaction.
That's true.
So,
but, we got institutions that are starting to come on board more and more
in
this equation.
But why are they doing that, though? Because it's a store of
value. Yeah.
Okay. It's not because they can move cash really quick. I mean, they want the digital assets so that they can move cash quickly.
So they can make money.
Cantor Fitzgerald, they've been talking, yeah. Howard Lutnick, before he came and joined the administration as CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, they were talking about digitizing, how important it is, because they need to move money around the world quickly.
Yeah.
Settlements. It's all about the settlements.
And they're starting to do that. So
yeah. Another aspect worth considering is how Bitcoin might influence broader monetary policy decisions if it becomes a significant reserve asset.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it will have a huge effect on that.
Yeah, that's where it starts getting really interesting, you know, with all of that, all those different moving parts that mm-hmm. we've never seen before.
Yeah,
you know,
they got to figure it out.
Just like with the gold standard. Once constrained the government monetary policy, Bitcoin reserve could potentially create similar constraints.
Yeah.
But in the digital framework, that's much harder to manipulate.
Yeah,
again.
There we go. Yes.
Yes.
I got a real rabbit hole discussion for you on that one about the manipulation and all that, but we can't do that right now.
We'll skip that rabbit hole for now.
I mean, it's a world economic rabbit hole, and talking about how the elite can't, they want to see crypto. They like the cryptography. It's all encrypted, but they don't want their stuff to be decrypted. So,
but they want sure.
But think about that.
Yeah.
Think about how that would go. All right.
But that's kind of the way the world has worked with the upper ones compared to us.
So what steps would you recommend for someone to looking to understand to potentially invest in Bitcoin given these developments?
Well,
I mean, you just mentioned somebody before we got on the show.
Yeah. I'm glad you asked that because, yeah, educating them about how it actually works. You know, it's very unique.
Do you think that you brought her around because of that?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think I have several people, and I'm getting people asking more questions about it. You know, and again, start small.
Yeah.
You know, I was the last person I was talking to, very good friend of mine. She said, well, I'm just going to use this as an example. Like, I want to buy $20,000 worth.
Okay.
Okay. And I said, well, that's great. I said, but maybe you should start a little bit lower to get to the kind of the hang of it. And I told mm-hmm. her different places to go to, like, you know, Bitcoin, Swan Bitcoin.
Right.
And things like that. And just start dabbling a little bit
mm-hmm.
so that you learn a little bit before you just go out and make a huge purchase or have to move a huge thing or worry about
right.
it. I said, we've all done it. And you know, we're more than happy to hold your hand and do this because we've all been there you know. But you don't want to do a huge buy to start with, you know.
Yeah, not when you don't understand it.
Yeah. And then after that, maybe we've always talked about it, Bitcoin hygiene.
Yep.
You've got to have good storage about it, you know.
Be careful about it.
Be careful.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the long term. You want to be able to put it in storage and store it where you know it's safe. I tell people, you don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
You don't let people know. You just don't do it, you know. And also, it keeps the government from knowing what you got, too.
Yeah, I think they're gonna know, but then you make good points. A couple of things. Well, if you're going to invest, you got to know how to store.
Yeah.
You don't ever go like to a place called Coinbase and keep your investment there. You just don't do mm-hmm. that. And if you want to find out from why you don't want to do that, get a hold of us offline. Get
yeah.
a hold of us on X, and because it's a longer conversation. But you made some excellent points, and you know, and I'll add that understanding Bitcoin's cyclical nature. is important, as we're seeing right now. We've seen
yep.
major boom and bust cycles. We're in one right now.
But we've seen that with so many different
yes.
things.
And each cycle has established higher lows, okay? And they've had higher highs. This strategic reserve concept could potentially impact that cyclical pattern in interesting ways. I think it might make it a little less volatile.
True, but you're saying highs, higher and lowers and all that. That's one thing, you know, when the stock market started really shooting up after 2008, I kept saying, yeah, but when it falls, that means it has to fall that much further, you know? So, okay. I'm not sure what's going on here, but
I don't know.
But anyway, you know, looking ahead, what do you think about future shows or telling our listeners how to navigate around certain things with Bitcoin and all that?
Well, I think we should talk about go in much more deeper into the secure storage option for Bitcoin.
I think so.
There's more institutional grade solutions becoming available, and you know you want to do your homework on that, because I'm still uncomfortable with a lot of that, even though some of the solutions that are there are with trust with companies I trust, but still I am not comfortable with them holding my Bitcoin.
I think,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it might be because the way that we came into this is that you always, you self-storage, you self-custody.
Right.
But now it's becoming more customary because people are not comfortable with that, to have institutional custody. And so I'm coming around to that. I'm really trying to think that one through. I think with multi-signature options to where that institution is really not holding your Bitcoin, but they're holding a key. Okay.
Okay.
But not a key that can unlock your digital box, so to speak. But they hold one key, which is a security piece, so that if your device got stolen or you lost your device or something and you have a key and they have a key, they can unlock that device for you so you can recover it and...
So kind of like a, what's the boxes in the bank?
A safe deposit box.
Yeah. Kind of like that. You know, you have to have both keys in order for you to access the contents of the box,
that's
right?
That's a good point, yeah.
So kind of along those lines, you know.
I think we need to talk more about the regulatory developments. I mean,
which hopefully we'll have some soon.
I mean, got to be honest with you folks. I mean, preparing for this show in particular was very difficult. There were so many things that were happening in the last week that when Linda and I prepped on this show, we're going, oh my gosh, this was significant. Howard Lednick, he was interviewed many times in two significant shows.
Long interviews. They weren't real short
either.
Senator
Loomis. Mm-hmm. Then you had the commentary pieces. We probably had five or six long pieces of content, and we're going, well, this is kind of weird. So we put together the most what we thought that were the important points out of it. But I think that's what adds to this rapidly changing landscape. And when we're thinking, like, what is it we're going to bring to you here in the future? And I think that those are important pieces, is regulatory, secure options.
And I have to say, maybe I find it interesting, the relationship or the comparison of Bitcoin and gold.
Oh, that's
you
a
know,
good
because,
idea.
Because, you know, it's always evolving. You have people that, and I'm not saying, you know, again, it's not financial advice that gold isn't good and silver isn't good. And
oh, they're all good.
They're all good. They all have their uses. There's in different ways to apply them. But some people are like, oh, no, Bitcoin's, you know, because I can't hold it. You know, I can hold the gold. And, you know, they're still on that mindset. They haven't fully got something that clicked in their brain, you know, like I said, for me, one of the ones things was when it was a limited amount, 21 million, then it really clicked in my head, okay, about Bitcoin, because a lot of people still, you tell them that and they go, really? There's only going to be 21 million? Yeah.
You know, I came across a BTC Sessions podcast.
Okay.
And of all the people outside of the Bitcoin world who was on it was Dr. Ken Berry, the carnivore doctor, right? And he is like the lone duck, right? The odd duck out of there having this conversation.
Yeah.
Yes. But he is new to this. He was very humble about his just willingness to learn now. But what hit him, Linda? And I didn't get to listen to the whole thing, but I fast forwarded to where he was at on that. And here's what got him. It was the scarcity. To him, he goes, that's the missing puzzle piece. Because he said, just like what you said, I can't hold it. I can't.
Right.
But there's so little of it. And that's what made it click. Then he went ahead and he started doing the homework and finding out why. And he's still learning. I mean, like we all understand, it could take several years to really understand this fully.
And
you're not going to understand it fully because it's ever evolving, right?
Yeah, and like when we first, you know, we've talked about it in the beginning, we got involved in some stuff before we become Bitcoiners, quote. We had some rug pulls done on us, and we learned about it, you know, but a lot of those, there's no limit.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like how our fiat system is.
It is exactly how it is. So when you start doing the comparison, start doing a little homework, and realize, oh, you know what? You better get on the train here pretty soon, or the train's going to have left the station. And, you know, there's still time.
Yeah.
But don't wait too long.
Well, when you talk about Bitcoin and gold, you know, that's something to consider. I mean, they're often compared to, but they serve different purposes in a portfolio. I mean, gold has been around for thousands of years and has a history of a store of value. Well, Bitcoin offers unique properties like programmability and ease of transfer. And that's important for where we are in this time in society. And I suspect we're going to see both play important roles in the future, especially with the AI piece. I mean, we probably should be bringing AI stuff to you, too.
You know, I agree with that. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the other countries and their potential diversity between, you know, their reserves and gold and Bitcoin or some combination with things. What choices are they going to make? Especially, you know, I hate to go back to the tariffs and all that. There's a lot of moving parts that could make a big difference in how the combination works. Is it going to be 50-50? Is it going to be, you know, what is it? What's this going to look like?
Yeah. So I think what we'll see with Senator Limas's proposal, the line between traditional finance and crypto is going to kind of get blurry.
Yeah.
And for investors and citizens alike, staying informed about these developments will be increasingly important.
Right.
So, I mean, there's just so much out there.
Well, there's so many different things going on in our life right now that we've never experienced, that we have to give it a little bit of time to start seeing where the markets are going to go and what's this, you know, the future look like.
Yeah.
I think that's my opinion, because we don't really know. It's like the tariffs and stuff. You know, at first everybody's like, oh my God, like we're all going to starve to death tomorrow or, you know, yesterday.
Yeah.
And not that, you know, there was going to be any negotiating or go back and forth. And all of a sudden you got all these countries that are, you know, saying, oh no, we're not going to charge you tariffs and we want to do business in America with you.
Well, I'm finding it interesting that there's like 80 countries that are in line
right
to speak with Trump right now to negotiate either zero for zero free trade.
Right, yeah,
right?
Exactly.
That's 80 countries. I think there was 100 on the list.
So, you know.
Okay, we're 80% there already. And the other thing, the paid provocateurs. I'm sorry. A lot of the people that were out there protesting all over the place, I mean, they weren't the MAGA people. Interestingly, though, the makeup of the people in those crowds kind of maybe resembled MAGA people, but they weren't. They were getting in buses all over the country.
Yep, they sure were. And have you seen some of the interviews? You know, they ask them, like they're holding a sign and they say, Well, what does that mean? Whatever it's set
on
the sign, and they don't even know what
here,
it says.
Let me
on
read my sign.
Yeah, let me tell you.
Give
me
what
a
do
few
you think
minutes
that
to know.
Is. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
But then we go back to, let's bring it home to Bitcoin, because if we're holding Bitcoin and other countries are doing Bitcoin, does the lay of the land, so to speak, is that going to make a difference in how we conduct some of our business? It could.
Yeah, and I think really the big tell right now, the story that is the tariffs.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's what's it's just sparking all of this excitement and derangement syndrome, or escalating it. But, you know, I think it would behoove everybody who's listening who doesn't understand how tariffs work. I certainly didn't understand it until I got a thorough education of what things were like before 1913. And before we brought in the Federal Reserve System, as we know it, the central bankers. And that wasn't a good thing. And not going to try to convince you otherwise, but the history speaks for itself. This country ran on tariffs.
I don't think a lot of people realize that. I don't think I really realized that till we were, you know, listening to different stuff, that it was actually tariffs before 1913.
Right.
We really hated it in 1913 when they introduced the income tax.
Right.
But I guess I never really explored what was how it was being dealt with before that.
And tariffs, as in our lifetime, was used more or less as a way of strong arming another country, whereas before it was just the way that we created revenue in our country for imported goods that took away the labor opportunities for our own people here in this country. You know, so I don't know. You had an opportunity to listen to the hours of content that we dug through. And I'm thinking, out of all of that, you want to have a thorough understanding of financial history, especially the tariffs and how this administration thinks. I recommend the All In podcast that had Howard Lutnick.
Yes.
That was fascinating. A lot of these podcasts are great, but that is probably one of the extraordinarily good ones that I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, and he's really good about talking in just layman terms, like we're talking now, not trying to be, you know, over your head and like he knows more or any of that. Just simple stuff so you can grasp what they're trying to accomplish with the tariffs and different stuff, not just the tariffs.
And the sense of duty. I mean, everybody that is in our in this administration has taken a downgrade in their salary. They're serving this country because they understand it is on life support, and they've got the best of the best. Some of you may not agree with that, but when you look at the pedigree of those who are serving, you take a Howard Lutnick or a Scott Bessent. They certainly do not need to be here. A Dan Bongino, who was making, I believe, $7.8 million and walked away out of Rush Limbaugh's Plum radio spot.
Yeah.
He walked away from that. And most of his shows, his replacement person, his show spots were gone. It's gone someplace else. So he walked away from a legacy to get $240,000 a year.
These are people you refer to as good stewards of the land.
Right. They're here. It's not about the money.
And that's exactly what they're doing.
Which is refreshing, isn't it? Because we have a lot of leaders in this country who got rich in government, and that's not how it's supposed to work.
They're even digging into that to let you know how you start out with one salary and you end up, you know, worth billions.
Especially
later.
Humble beginnings is like being a bartender, and now you've got millions of dollars, and really your only job outside of bartending has been as a United States House of Representatives.
Yep. So
you had to know some things or get some advanced information to make some, you know, really good trades. Yeah, I think so. So
anyway, I hope that this show's been very informative for everybody.
Yeah.
And we'll take more deep dives into this money and tariffs and Bitcoin and where we go. And again, like we've said many times, the globe. This goes around the world.
Yeah, it is.
Which is way different. So with that, folks, until next time, have a great week.
Take care.
Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's a name I love to say. And we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day. When he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be, he gave us all a protocol. This world
the news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.